Good morning. Greetings in Jesus' name. The title of our message this morning is The Things That Which Remain. We've been talking this weekend about media and Christian character as we deal with media. We've been focusing on some fundamentals of the Christian life and as it deals with media. And this morning, I want to talk a little bit about history and how the church has looked at the principles of media. And so we've been, as a youth group, looking at these things as it pertains to us as younger ones. But this morning, I want to present these principles for all of us to think about. The things which remain. The story is told of a wealthy farmer in the United States that somehow was informed of the situation in Haiti and the deficiency there of resources, and he had a burden to go to Haiti and to help the culture. So on his own time and with his own money, he flew over to Haiti and he went to a location and he bought a spot that could be farmed. I don't know how much land it was, but he bought the equipment to farm this land, and he built a wall around this field. And he hired local natives there to help him, and they worked on this wall. They built this big concrete wall to encase this field. And then he took this equipment, and he cleared the land, and he got it ready for planting. And he got, with the natives' help, they planted coconut trees in this field. And I don't know what the relationship was with these Haitians as he was working on this project, but I can't help but think a man with a burden like this didn't spend time helping them to understand the process of farming. And his idea was to help them plant a crop, debt-free, that was going to be something that would feed them and their children and their grandchildren. So when he got done with the project, he turned the whole farm over to the local natives. He got on the airplane and he flew back home. Well, these local natives now had this farm that had this perfect opportunity. They had this big concrete wall that encased this farm to protect it. They had the seed in the ground. They were getting ready to grow these nice coconut trees. Everything was well planned, and it was there waiting to grow. After this farmer left, shortly after, they went into this field and they dug up the seed and they ate it. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 3. I want to read the first six verses here of Revelation. This is the church of Sardis. Start reading here, Revelation chapter 3, verse 1. And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, These things saith he that hath the seven spirits of God and the seven stars, I know thy works, that thou hast a name, that thou livest and art dead. Be watchful, and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found thy works perfect before God. Remember therefore how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come on thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come on thee. Thou hast a few names, even in Sardis, which hath not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He that overcometh the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot out his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. Here we notice that this church, as a group, was a dying church. But this church seemed to have a reputation among its peers that it was doing good things. They had a name, but the angel said that you're dead. I know thy works, that thou hast a name, and thou livest, and art dead. What does he tell them here? He says, watch, be watchful. Be diligent that you will revive. Watch, be diligent that you grow spiritually. You know, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13, it says, Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, and quit ye like men. Be strong. You know, the aspect of diligence here was missing in the church of Sardis. And they were at the point of being a dead church. They had failed to be diligent. Here in Sardis, they were admonished to be diligent. to strengthen what was still left, and find a way back to spiritual vitality. This church was dying. Spiritual life was decaying fast. There was almost nothing left. There was a state of emergency spiritually, and the angel said, if you don't repent, that there will be judgment. I want to stop here and think about this aspect of dying. You know, we're not in Sardis this morning. We're not a part of the Church of Sardis. But dying is still a possibility in your life individually, in my life, in the life of a church. As we face the battle of life, as we live in the flesh, we're in the world, but we're not of the world. Dying is always an option that we must guard against. Since life is found in the believer and not in the organization, then life must be maintained in us as individuals. If we want to be a part of a living church, then there must be life in each individual. Individuals that come together in a church, there's vitality because each individual has that center column of relationship with Jesus Christ that we talked about this weekend. You know, at Sardis, their works were performed for a reputation among their peers. They look good to other people, but God said, you're dead. You know, they might have been busy doing a lot of good things. We're not going to go into their culture. They were here, and it seemed like that they had a reputation. So I'm sure they were doing things maybe for the community, maybe in politics in the city. A lot of good projects, but God said, you're dead. Verse 3, He said, remember therefore how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come on thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come upon thee. Remember. The angel said, if you want to have life, you need to remember. Remember what you have been taught. Remember what you've received. Remember what you had, and come back. Remembering, I believe, is a command here. If they wanted to find life, they needed to remember. The things that they had been taught, they were accountable for. The angel was there, and he said, you're going to have to give an account because you have forgotten what you had. The commandments, the promises, and the judgments. They didn't remember. They were dying because they had forgot. Maybe not forgot in the sense that it had left their long-term memory. But they forgot because they no longer valued the things that had been taught to them. The things that they had, the value, they didn't esteem them highly, and they had forgotten them in that they were no longer obeying the things that they had. Their values had changed. They were pursuing other goals and ambitions. But that didn't change the fact of the age-old truths that still existed. Remembering is a fundamental principle of life. And it's still for us today, as we consider the things that remain, it's important for us to remember what has been given to us. As Anabaptist people in this country, we must remember. You know, we have more that has been taught to us than probably anybody else on the globe. Let's turn to Luke chapter 12. Start reading here. I think we'll not read all of the verses. Let's start reading here, Luke chapter 12. Jesus is talking about the unfaithful servant, and then he gets done talking about, finishes up that. Let's start reading here at verse 47. And that servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did not commit things worthy of stripes, shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. To whom much is given, much will be required. You know, we've been given much. We've been taught the principles of God. extensively. We've been given godly examples of obedience in every walk of life. We have been blessed with a peaceful environment for us to exercise our faith. When it comes to remembering, what really are we missing in the fullest level of accountability? You know, if we lack appreciation for what we have been given, it will compromise our influence of spiritual truth and conduct. We must remember and appreciate the things that we have. The Bible teaching that we have here and the ability to exercise that teaching in application, we have a tremendous opportunity. And not only that, but the faith has been exercised in an example before us. You know, a lot of the things that we live out in practical life and principle, we did not have to necessarily dig them out and discover them, but we were taught them by people older than us. You know, it's noteworthy here that he addresses those who were almost dead, and he commands them to strengthen the things which remain. That was his admonition. He didn't say, you're almost dead, so level the playing field and start over with something new. But rather, in their dying state, he commanded them to come back to what you've been taught. Strengthen the principles of age-old truth. Reconnect with what has been proven to work. You know, there were only a few left in this church who hadn't compromised on principle of life and godliness. Those who were dying were told to repent and hold fast. Spiritual life, I believe, values the truth that has been given. That which has been given to us, if I truly am spiritual, I will value that truth and I will exercise it in a practical way in my life. We will hold fast to the principles of repentance and obedience. Strengthen the things which remain. If we truly value what God has given us through His Word and His teachings, then our focus will be on strengthening the good things that we have. Focus on the strength. Build up with godly support. Keep the applications relevant to principle. You know, without a proper appreciation for the things which remain, we can hardly fix the problems that threaten us. Dying is natural. Life takes effort. It takes work, individually and collectively. Life is found in the believer. And as we come together in a church group and a brotherhood, there is life. The organization is only an attribute of that life. There is no life in the organization all by itself. Life must be found in the individual as we collectively work together. Is my walk of obedience strengthening the godly fabric of our doctrine and practice, or is my contribution adding to the decay? Be watchful and strengthened. We need to see and beware of the practices that we are involved in relationships, in building truth and principles. You know, if we find some decay in our practice, let's modify it with biblical principles and positive attitudes and applications. The answer is not necessarily in something new and wonderful. You know, when I lack appreciation for the things that remain, the principles that have been given to me, when I lack appreciation for that, but I stay in the organization, I reduce my contribution down to a level of formal works because I'm just going through the process. That appreciation is not there, and I'm not really contributing to the longevity of principles and practical applications, even though I'm going through the motions. And then we wonder why our children just don't grasp the vision. You know, we need to look in the mirror and understand that probably if the angel could give us a message, he'd say, go back and strengthen the things that have been given to you in an appreciation, in the values that are there. If we're going to strengthen, we must understand and appreciate the principles. In media technology, are we growing the seed that has been planted, or are we consuming it? You know, much like those Haitian people, we have a garden that has been given to us. Many people before us have went to a lot of work to plant this garden, to till it up and plant this seed for us, to grow trees that will feed and nurture children and grandchildren. They built a bulwark around that with practical application to principles. And then we are born in time after that. Are we going into the garden and digging up that seed and consuming it on ourselves? Or are we nurturing and watering and fertilizing that seed so it will grow fruit in my generation, in my children's generation, in my grandchildren? You know, we look at the farming aspect of that scenario there in Haiti, and we think, how foolish of those people. They had this perfect opportunity for food, and they went and dug up the seed. How short-sighted! And yet, are we doing that in our culture? The things that have been given to us. As we look at the media world has grown from a piece of the pie in the 1950s with the invention of the television and the development of movies. There was a piece of the pie that started to integrate our culture. To now, in our day, it has been developed to a media culture that has encompassed almost all of our lives. But as we look at the situation that we face today and what the church faced in the 1950s, the principles really are still about the same. They have different applications, but the principles are there. Internet and media. I'm sure all of you, if I would ask you, do you really appreciate that the church back in the 1950s took a stand on television? I'm sure all of you probably would raise your hand. Yes, we give testimony to the fact that we appreciate what the church has done for me and my children today. Back in from about 1943 to about 1960 was when the Conference Church was taking a stand on television. There was men there that saw the principle and made application. They understood the threat of television content. They saw the direction of travel that this was going to go. They saw how important it was to take action. So they stood on that principle. You know, we look at television today, and we say, well, how obvious. You know, the content is so corrupt that that's a no-brainer. But you know, that decision that they made was not all easy. The application of no television was a rocky road of that time. In 1958, Lancaster Conference had families in their churches that were not willing to conform to this principle and the application that the church made. And finally, there was a church leader who stood up in church and had to read off the names of the families who were not lining up with this application. They weren't in agreement. They didn't appreciate the application. And as he read off those names, those families got up and walked out of the church. You know, I believe that one of the principles that the church at that time was upholding was controlling the content of teaching and information for our churches and our families. Who will entertain and educate our children? That was a big question mark. And with the television and the content that was coming through, they were concerned about guarding the influence and the teaching that their children were going to get. You know, today we have a keen awareness of television content and what we've been spared from. Our generation is faced with maintaining those same principles in our generation with much more complexity to the issue. It's much more complex in a lot of ways, but the principle is still the same. Are you concerned about who will influence your children? Are you concerned about where the education is going to come from in a practical life? Now, I'm not talking about going to school, but I'm talking about the influences that shape our life and our concepts. This weekend we talked about influence and how we are created to be influenced. And all of us are created that way. And we will be influenced by something. We're going to be modeled by some kind of influence in our life, some people in our life. Somebody is going to influence us. Today, as we sit here this morning, your reality is the sum of all of your experiences. You have made application to those experiences, and you've related to them, and it has made you the person that you are. You know, the way our economic and informational society is set up, there is no way to get around the exposure and the use of Internet and web-based content. Even if I remove it completely from my life, then in some way or other, I am going to be affected by the content of media. Can and will we maintain the principles applied in 1945 to our generation? I believe we can, but we must understand the principles, and we must have appreciation for those principles. Controlling the content. You know, the content is critical. It's really not about glass and plastic of the television. It was about the content. And today it's the same way. It's not necessarily about the glass and the plastic or the shape or the model of the device. It's about the content. We've already talked about that. Tools, not entertainment. You know, the television, when it first came out in the 1950s, was basically there for entertainment. It changed the whole realm of our families in American culture. It took the Victorian era, and it gave them some input into their homes, and now instead of doing things as a family, in the evenings they sat around and watched television and listened to the radio. And there was influences coming in from all over. Hollywood was a big influence on American families. And that was what started the development of the popular culture. And we see where that popular culture has brought us to today. I'm repeating some of what we already talked about. Tool, not entertainment. You know, the principle of television was to stay away from the concept of the world in entertaining the church. The church didn't want the world to entertain our children. They didn't want the world deciding what kind of content they would use to embed influence through entertainment into the minds of their children. You know, it's very similar to our Christian school movement. The Christian school movement was started to guard the influence and the teaching for our children. A good steward of time. We've already talked about that this weekend. How much time is spent on media. And in the 1950s, that's what was happening. More and more family time was spent around this influence. And less time building relationships. And where did it take the world? What is the source of the content? You know, when we use a source of information, that source will have an influence on us. The values or the lack of values of that source will end up influencing us if we feed on the content of that source. Remember what we talked about. Our memory establishes reality. Our reality today is based on our memory. The things that we remember and our experiences have shaped our reality. And that's what happens with media. As we take part, as we feed on information from different sources, that information is shaping my memory and it's creating a reality in my life. You know, we see it in the world a lot of times. There's people who do crazy things and somehow they think it's real and it doesn't turn out right. But they've seen it on movies for years and years and it has become their reality to the point where it's brainwashed and they think they can do it. And they end up dying or getting hurt and lots of things. You know, there's a lot of violence in our culture, and it's because they see it on movies. And that memory has established reality. Now we say we wouldn't near go there. But we are made up of the same tissue as people in society. And so influences still affect us. Our minds are influenced by other minds. If we're going to maintain principles, then we can't make decisions based on, well, what am I going to have to give up? What is it going to cost me? Are we going to compromise on that and lose something much greater? Or let's just ignore it and hope it goes away, like John was talking about this morning. You know, ignorance is not bliss as we face the whole issue of media. Throwing out the device will not eliminate the issue. The device is not immoral. Our use defines the morality of the device. You know, for years, the church was safe with the concept of stay out of the water. When that principle was applied in the 1950s, it was the principle of stay out of the water. The water is dangerous. Stay out. And it worked for many years. But once media expanded to encompass so much of our lives, that's no longer working. We're going to need to learn how to swim because we're in the water. Are we strengthening the principles with decisions that we are making in our generation? Are we learning how to swim? in this water that is creeping up around us. You know, we say we appreciate, but do our applications of media really bear that out? When you think about a fraction, you know, what's the difference between 250 over 1,000 and 1/4? Really, then nothing. The ratio is the same. The fraction is the same, just bigger numbers. Well, I want to use some illustrations here to reduce this complex issue down to maybe a fraction of something that we can relate to with our reality. Think about the applications that we are making on media. So if I would come to your church, and I assume you don't use the radio here, and I would suggest to you as a church that you consider allowing the radio. And with that, I would give instructions of why I would say that. I would encourage you to allow the radio, but only select one gospel station that you're going to use as a church on an honorary basis. You know, we're going to allow the radio, but we suggest, encourage, and strongly suggest that we only use one station. And if something on that station happens to be sung or said that is not biblical, then we would, on your honor, you need to shut it off when that happens. Or maybe some objectionable advertisement comes across that station. You should turn it off or unplug it. Or maybe television. I would tell you, well, how about, I suggest that you take a vote to allow television. But in that suggestion, I would suggest that you only use one channel. Pick the best channel and then only allow that. Suggest and require that on your honor that you will only use this one channel to control the content. You know, if some objectionable advertisement comes along, on your honor, turn off the television and wait about 5 minutes till you think the advertisement is over with and then turn it back on. What would the outcome of that vote be? I'm pretty sure I know that you as a church would tell me, no, we're not going there. We understand what might happen. And we have a safe application. We're doing without it. But you know, as we look at our media use today in practical life and how it is acting out in our life, our actions, our habits, is that what we are doing with internet resources like YouTube and news sites and other video clip sites? Trying to use a source of information when most of the information on places like YouTube is for unchristian entertainment and appetite. It's created by a society that is going a different direction than you are. What about listening to a cappella gospel music on YouTube? We say, well, it's cheaper. I don't have to buy a CD. I don't have to buy a download. The content's the same. Whether I go over here and buy a CD or I listen to the very same song on YouTube, the content's the same. And that's correct. But think about this for a minute. If down here at the town of Harrisburg, is that right? There was two stores in that town. One was a Christian bookstore that was run by an Anabaptist. And they had Christian books on the shelf and they had racks of CDs, gospel singing CDs. And right across the street was some kind of Blockbuster movie rental. Do you have Blockbusters out here? A movie rental store. And it was full of all the movies that are generally found in these movie rentals. But over here in one corner, they had a rack set up, and they had a selection of Anabaptist gospel a cappella music. And it was the same music that the Anabaptist sold across the street. And so your son would say, Dad, I want to drive down to town. There's a certain CD that I want to buy. Which store would you suggest and encourage him to go to buy that CD? Does it matter? The content's the same. If he walks out with that CD that he wants, and gets in his car and comes home, whether he goes to the Christian bookstore or whether he goes to Blockbuster and buys that CD, the content is the same, right? But I'm pretty sure I know what you would tell your son to do. You would tell him to go down and don't go to Blockbuster, don't go to that source to get your music. Go over here to this store that sells Christian literature and music and buy that CD. You know, the source of our information does have an influence. I don't want my children going to Blockbuster to buy their content, whether it's good or even if it is good. I want them to go to a safe source, a safe environment to purchase their influence. You know, if you study television usage in our day, and if you look, I believe you will find that if the viewers of television in our culture from about the age of 13 to in the mid-20s to maybe 30 years old, but in the mid-20s at least, that section of young people in our society are leaving the old-fashioned television content of watching a station, and they are moving to watching what? Video clips and YouTube and content like that. 2.5 times more of their time is spent on video clip sites and YouTube and sources like that than on traditional television, the young people in our society. You know, I believe it's a shift to the future. That there is more, you still see the 60 and 70 year olds that sit down in their living room and watch traditional stations like Fox News and CNN, and they want to see a news anchor give the news of today and the issues that face them politically. But the young people of our society, they don't seem to want to be burdened with all that clutter. They want to go right to what they want. They instantly want this little patch and this little patch. And so they're moving towards Netflix and YouTube and these video clip sites. So we, the church, who give testimony to be television free, we're a television free culture, right? But we don't have traditional television. But if we're making an exception for good video clips on YouTube, maybe good video clips on news sources, television sources, for education or whatever it might be. In our society, which is a television culture, but their young people are moving away from traditional television, and they're moving towards YouTube and Netflix and other video sites for their source of entertainment. 2.5 times more time over here than over here. So we have society that's moving here towards a different source. And we have this television-free church that is moving over here. Now we have a church culture and a popular culture using the same source for their information and entertainment. What does it tell us about us? How long will it be until the activity and the content will be similar or the same? We say, well, oh no, I would never go there. But you know, it was not very long after the conference church took a stand on television that most of them backed up on that stand because of resistance and caved in to the pressure and allowed television. Shortly after, it was in the, before 1965 or around that time, they were coming back and saying, okay, we'll allow television. You know, we're going to these sources for good things. These sources could and eventually probably will influence us and our children until what? We buy a television? No. But until we allow these sources to become the same influence of our lives as what is influencing popular culture. Our forefathers drew a line on television because of the concern of influences of these sources. They were not only concerned about the source right this minute, but they looked at the source and they said, this source is not a good source for us. The content is not good. Now we are gravitating back towards these sources. Are we violating the principle of controlled content and influence that has been guarded and preserved for 50 years by those that came before us. You know, I heard in the panel, one of the panelists said, we're behind the ball on the media process. And so, I forget all the recommendations that he made, but he said, we're behind the ball and this would help us catch up, and I believe that you're right. That the issue of media has defaulted my generation into a new generation, and we've acclimated without really understanding where this was going to go and where it's going to take us. You know, if we use Fox News and television outlet sources for news, I love to read. I love to read articles. And I would rather read than watch a video clip because I like to be able to decide what I want to read. But if I for myself go to Fox News and read articles about politics and what the current events of the day, and I stay away from those video clips, but my sons and my daughters see me going to this source to read these articles, and they become acclimated to that source, but I've already seen it in my children. When I read the article, they want to watch the video clip. A good friend of mine has taught high school for about 10 years. And he just recently told me, we were talking about this issue, and he said, I am astounded at the difference in my students today and yesterday. He said, I'm still picking myself up to understand the concept difference of my students. He said, we have went from a reading people to a watching people. He said, I have students that will do a whole documentary on a 30-minute YouTube clip. And that's the only resource that they reference when they write this documentary. You know, how long will it be if I take part in the source till my children acclimate to the source and they are watching these video clips, and pretty soon we'll watch breaking news every morning. Not on a television. Maybe not even a big computer on an entertainment stand. But we'll watch it through the day in our bored moments and the times that we have to spare, to do something different, we'll go to these sources and we acclimate. It's a boiling the frog kind of gradualism. You know, I've heard that you can boil a frog if you do it slowly. Put it in cold water that it's familiar with, turn the burner on real slow, and gradually heat that up. You can boil that frog alive. I've never tried it. But I believe we need to be careful that the same principle doesn't happen to us. We acclimate to the source, and we end up with the influence. Can we really say we are still upholding the principles of no television? Sure, we don't own a television. But are the sources influencing me and my children? You know, if this happens, it will not only change our reality, influence our sense of morality, but it will rob us of relationships. It will change us in the aspect of brotherhood culture to a popular culture, just like society around us. You know, popular culture comes with a lot of symptoms. One of them is individualism. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'll decide for myself what is right. I'll decide what is right. Nothing's going to tell me that this is right. I'll decide what is right. You know, we see those influences coming into the Anabaptist churches. They're prevalent. They're all over our nation. Those influences are coming in. And Jesus said, remember what you have seen and heard, and rebuild. Come back to the truth. Strengthen the things which remain. You know, I think it's going to take brotherhoods with concerned fathers and visionary youth to work together to solve this problem. I'm not here today to tell you what to do about it. I just want to bring this to your attention so that you can decide as a brotherhood. It's going to take you. The generation gap here needs to be spanned by trust. And you need to take the vision of the young people with their perception. You know, us 40-year-olds and 60-year-olds, we defaulted into this generation. But these younger ones grew up in this generation. You need to have a vision to come together with your older people who can remember what has happened and bring this together in a vision and establish an application. It's going to take a vision if we're going to choose the destiny and accept the path. You know, internet is no longer this sliver of a pie that we can stay away from. We can't stay out of the water. We're going to have to learn how to swim. But in these areas, I believe that we can succeed spiritually if we're willing to integrate the generations and work on a solution. In our Mennonite history, I'm going over time here a little bit. I'll try to hurry. In our Mennonite history, we have proven to be able to draw lines on devices. I believe that is the weakness of the application of television. It has served well in our generations leading up to my life. But there's always a weak side to every strength. And the weakness, I believe, is that we have done well in taking a device and setting it here and saying yes or no. Like they did with television. Like our church did with radio and a lot of churches. But I believe, generally speaking, that we are weak on dividing content within an approved device. We're not good at it. Once we accept the device, we somehow assume the content. For example, I'll give you this example as an example. Not necessarily that it's prevalent or the most dangerous, but think about this. A lot of churches, including our church, has had a stand for years on video cameras. We've used still cameras for years, but not video cameras. We had a stand as a church that we won't use video cameras. I don't know how you do here. It doesn't really matter. I'm using this as an example. But you know, we took this still camera. We didn't buy a video camera. We used the still camera. Film camera, right? Go to the store and get our film developed. We had a nice picture. We used that through the generations to document a lot of good things. Well, after a while, the film camera was dispersed, and then the digital camera came into existence. And with the digital camera came the ability to video. We have an approved device, the camera, the still camera. Now it has the ability to do video. We're not allowed to buy a video camera, but suddenly we have video cameras. You see what has happened? Now, I'm not saying that that particular thing is a yes and no issue. I use that as an example to show us that we have a weakness, I believe, in our churches, that we're good at putting something up here and saying no or yes. But we're not very good at taking something that we have already assumed, and then as we see something, an influence creeping into that approved device, we're not very good at saying, now wait a minute, we need to divide this content. You know, I wonder if YouTube would have come in a separate device in the shape of a radio. And we would have had to go and purchase this at Walmart to be able to use YouTube. I wonder if the outcome of our usage of that would have been different. I imagine it would have at least caused a lot more concern. But since the influence of things like YouTube came into our laptops and into our computers and into our phones, they were already approved, and by default, they just kind of came in. Concerned? Yes, we're concerned. Do we do anything about it? Will we shine the light on the principle? In conclusion, we say we remember what has been given, what we have received, and what we've heard. We've been given much. Much will be required. Is our focus and energy channeled towards the positive contribution of the things that remain? Is that seed that has been planted for you and I, buried in our hearts, is it burning alive with principle that comes out in application? In our homes, in our churches, and individually. You know, there's no life in the organization. There's only life in the individual. And life will create relationships. Relationships, as we work together, we can solve these issues. Relationships is so important on this issue of media. And I challenge you as a church, as you work together, to span that generation gap and work together for the good of the kingdom, that God's name will be honored through the decisions that you make as a brotherhood. May God bless.